Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 23rd, 2021. As always, we are grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my it's over 46 years anyway, of living life and doing therapy. And I'm grateful to announce again that these tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says start here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for over 16 years to improve the quality of my life and my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of that infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. You can also download the worksheet process itself absolutely free. It's a simple PDF file. You can print off and use it as often as you'd like. You can go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And you can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process, or talked about testimonials about how applying this worksheet process actively in their life has improved their quality of life, or asking points to clarify some of the power behind the principles or the principles that give this tool such power. We encourage people to go there, read that chapter of that book, download that app, put it to use in your life, print off the worksheet and use it. And then call us if you have comments or questions. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. There are so many shows. There are over, by my estimate, there are over 3,000 hours worth of shows in the archives. Not 3,000 shows, because the first 8 years, they were individual shows, 1 hour each, 5 days a week. And for the last 2 years plus, it has been, each individual show has been 2 hours, 5 days a week. So you won't have 3,000 shows, but you'll have over 3,000 hours of audio files. And you don't have to go sifting through those 3,000. Jeannie Rice has curated out highlight shows. And so if you click on the red and white bullseye after you go to whyagain.org, it will take you to a page where there's a list. As you scroll down, there'll be a list of highlight shows of these MP3 files that Jeannie recommends, that listeners have recommended, that those shows be singled out for special notice because they're so powerful, or they contain an actual demonstration of the application of the worksheet process. So we're here on the 113th day of the year. We're doing the Course in Miracles lessons. We're in a review lesson. And one of the paragraphs of the intro to the review lessons says, place these ideas within your mind and let your mind use them as it chooses. Give it faith that your mind will use them well, being helped in its decision by the one, the creator, that gave these thoughts to you. Have faith in these reviews. The means that the Holy Spirit uses will not fail. The wisdom of your mind will come to your assistance. Give direction at the outset and then lean back in quiet faith and let the mind employ the thoughts as they have been given to you to use. So today's review of Lesson 113 is a review of Lesson 95, which said, I am one, capital S, self. I am united with my Creator. Serenity and perfect peace are mine, because I am one self, completely whole, at one with all creation and the Creator. And then review lesson number 96. Salvation comes from my one self, capital S self, my larger spiritual self. From my one self, whose knowledge still remains within my mind, I see creation's perfect plan for my salvation perfectly fulfilled. And the recommendation is that on the hour, we recite the first lesson, I am one self united with my Creator. And on the half hour, we recite, salvation comes from my one true self. We're also tapping into Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment. Her lesson 113 is titled, Flying Friendly Skies. She quotes W.H. Auden as saying, stagger onward, rejoicing. Pam writes, the morning review is, serenity and perfect peace are mine. I am one with everything. Pam writes, please accept this gift of three more stories from my inbox, all of which happened in airports. Since I was five, I loved astronauts and space flight. I always dreamed of someday meeting an astronaut. While playing, in quotes, with the experiments from E Cubed, a book that she wrote, my wife gifted me with a book by astronaut Chris Hadfield. I read it in tears, thinking, this guy and I could have been brothers. Well, guess who he meets a few days later at the airport? The one, the only, Commander Chris Hadfield. Someone else writes, Mary Kay was in the Minneapolis airport, and she couldn't get the song Tears of a Clown out of her mind. Before she boarded her next flight, she bumped into Smokey Robinson, whom she'd always adored and had hoped to meet. He even gave her a big hug. The third story was, the last airport miracle story started with a joke. A friend said, he's always wanted to meet a porn star, only half serious, or maybe not. He just happened to be seated next to a real-life porn star on the plane. She even showed him her website. So, serenity and perfect peace are mine for the morning review, and in the evening review, I am one with everything. That's from Pam Grout's book. The review lessons for today are, I am one self, united with my Creator, and salvation comes from my one true self. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you press that number or call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. I had something to share today from... Well, I have several things to share. One of the things I'll share is that Michael and Jeannie Rice did an intensive last year, and as part of the intensive, they had a person volunteer herself and her husband to do a responsibility communication in the middle of the intensive. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long. It's only for those people who are really committed, but now it's available free. They've decided to make it available free for a week or a little more than a week. I don't know what it is. But they mentioned it in the past couple of days in their internet show, and so we were reviewing it, we, meaning the royal we. I was reviewing it yesterday between patients and while doing paperwork, and I reviewed enough of it and skipped through it and reviewed it enough that I decided to offer to share some of it with the support group last night. And so that's available. And if you go to the archives of the forgive me, I'm not a good multitasker. So if you go to whyagain.org and you click on the microphone, the picture of the microphone, and then you come down to April, click on April, and you go through this week, which I'm doing now. In this week, somewhere within this week of the 19th and 20th and 21st and 22nd, you'll see in the notes that Jeannie Rice has made, she's put in a link for the responsibility communication tool. And that is on April 13th. Okay, so view the link to the 2-hour responsibility communication practicum from Saturday, April 10th. It's available for 2 weeks from the 13th. And when you click on it, you can watch this husband and wife team and get coached by Michael for the responsibility communication tool. So it's only available for another week or so. And it is, it's a complex tool because of all the layerings of conditionings that each of us have, and how confused our meanings are for various words, and how strongly we are each programmed to blame people and things outside of us for our emotions. So it's worth watching and slowing down and taking notes. And so that's one thing I wanted to offer, that it is a, it's painfully long at times. It gets interrupted with questions from other participants. But if you stick with it, there's a powerful set of cues at several different points where there are clarifications made in the tool, the responsibility communication tool. The responsibility communication tool is the tool that's presented in the lecture that Dr. Michael Rice does titled, Did You Hear What I Think I Said? And so you can buy that DVD from Michael and listen to the whole 2-hour thing. Or you can bypass that, take a shortcut to it, And the tool itself is available for free download off the website all the time. It's a it's an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper with a bunch of words on it, and it's probably going to get edited and cleared up and clarified even more after this work. And now, for the next week, you can actually see a living example of it being applied between a husband and wife where there's conflict or miscommunication or hurt feelings and strong emotions. So April 13th, in the archives, click on the link for the Vimeo video of that live demonstration. The tool itself is meant to help the person who is triggered to upset refine their ability to communicate about how they are responsible for creating their upset. And while that dynamic will get strengthened if you actually take the time to read that letter that you write or send the letter to the other person so they can read it, the work is already done by the time you practice communicating responsibly, responsibility communication. Intention is for me to heal with responsibility communication. The intention, the goal is not for me to get my partner to change or stop doing something that I find irritating. The goal is for me to get crystal clear about how I'm carrying with me into the situation the upset that gets resonated by the interpretation I place on events. And for me to get very clear about that in a way that lets me communicate it, whether I'm writing it or speaking it to somebody else, is a real powerful tool. And that's what responsibility communication is about. And there's a major point of clarification in that video where the woman who's brave enough to do the demo has written out this letter. She's taken a good long time and lots of her own emotional energy to write out this responsibility communication letter. And the one of the major learning pieces in the video is that the third point in the responsibility communication tool says, here's where I identify my thoughts and feelings, hyphen, my issue, all caps, underlined, and exclamation point. My issue is in all caps. And these are the subjective observations. And this woman, bless her heart, has interpreted that as meaning, here's where I identify my thoughts and feelings. And she missed the part about how all she really wants to do here is identify her issue that she needs to heal. So she went on and on about her thoughts and feelings, and there's this wonderful interplay where she gets to understand, with Michael's guidance, how she was hiding attacks at or toward her partner in the guise of talking about her thoughts and feelings. And the real powerful clarification point in that video is that the third step in the responsibility communication tool is not for me to spell out everything to my partner about all of my thoughts and feelings that I think are caused by them, but to simply succinctly, precisely say, after I talk about how this happened, you walked in the room, I was sitting on the couch, I said hello, you didn't answer, you walked out of the room, very clearly, no interpretation, no judgment, just a description of the facts. That's what happens in step two. And then in step three, all I get to say, all I really want to say is, I had a lot of anger come up for me. I had these thoughts come up that you thought I wasn't important. Not two or three paragraphs of all of my pain and all of my suffering that was caused because you didn't say hello when I said hello to you. So there's powerful points of clarification in that video. It is a long process to sit through, 2 hours and 20 minutes. And yet, for one of the more powerful tools that Michael and Jeannie teach that often doesn't get a lot of airtime or living examples on the internet show, there it is. And it's up there for another week. And I encourage people, if they're at all interested, to take advantage of it before they lose the opportunity. I could go on and on, but I have a feeling that the tool is too complex and might be too... I may not be able to do it justice. So the video is there. If you go back to the archives and look at April 13th, you'll see the link for the video, and you can access it for another week absolutely free. The other thing that I was going to share is from the book, The Tao Made Easy. And from the section titled Quit Doing Good, Alan Cohen, the author of the book, The Tao Made Easy, he writes, when a woman in the African Himba tribe knows she is pregnant, she goes into the wilderness with some friends, and together they pray and meditate until they hear the song of the child. The tribe believes that every human being has a unique energy that can be expressed as a song that represents that person's soul. The women then teach the song to the tribe. And when the baby is born, the villagers gather to sing that child into the world. Then, at significant milestones in the child's life, things such as the beginning of education, the initiation into adulthood, marriage, and childbirth, the villagers sing that person his or her song. Finally, when that individual is ready to pass from this life, the tribe sings that person on into the next world. There is one other time when the villagers sing that community member their song. If he or she commits a crime or socially unacceptable act, that person is called to the center of the village, and the community sings that person's song. The tribe realizes that correction is achieved not by punishment, but by remembering who we truly are. So when I was reading that this morning, I was moved to tears on a variety of levels. And I thought about how the essence of our work on Mind Shifters Radio, the essence of our work in each of the Mind Shifters support groups, and so many of my sessions where people are so inclined, is to help people remember who and what they truly are. If you've been around for enough of these transitions between our first hour and our second hour on Mind Shifters Radio in the past 2 years, you have probably heard me say, I'd like to remind us all that we come from love, We are made of this stuff we call love, the creative energy. We actually are love, that energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. That's what this work is about. It's not about all of the words. It's not even about the worksheet. It's about remembering who you are. It's about remembering how to access the still small voice within you, the touch point to a higher wisdom than your conscious logical mind. To understand that while the role of a guru might be useful at one time or another in your life, as the way of mastery reminds us, at some point, you know, you can have a guru or a master or some teachings that carry you through difficult times, but eventually you're going to have to say, hey, put me down. I want to get on with this myself. You are the only one who can act the knowledge of who you are. You are the only one through whom the creative energy, which wants to express uniquely through you in this moment, can express. And so all of the tools that Michael and Jeannie teach and all of the work in these Mind Shifter radio show podcasts and Mind Shifter support groups is designed to help us step into the two-prong approach of remembering who and what we are and removing everything from our mind-body energy system that is not in alignment with that truth. So the power of reminding someone who has stepped out of bounds, who is doing something in this village, as they say, that was a crime or socially unacceptable, instead of punishing that person and treating them as though they were not the energy of creation expressing in form, that they were not truly loved, that they're not valuable, remind them of their true nature. And in this particular tribe, they did that with song. In some cultures, they do that by reminding each other with a phrase like namaste. And namaste, my favorite definition for namaste comes from Ram Dass. In one of his books, he said, in the greeting namaste, what I'm trying to communicate is, I honor the light within you. I honor the place in you of light and love and truth and peace. I honor that place within you where when you go consciously to that place in you and I go consciously to that place in me, there's only one of us. Namaste. Susan, your microphone is on. How are you today?
I'm okay. This is so amazing about the song, Dr. Tim. My son, even as a little boy, used to come up to me and say, that person has a song. Certain people affected him profoundly, especially if he felt he loved them. And he'd say, she has a song. He never sang it to me, but he always said that for years. He still says it. That person has a song. So when you read that, I thought, oh, my God, that's so incredible.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Well, and there are some other stories I've heard about different indigenous tribes where instead of punishment, they would call the person to the center of the village and just talk to them about all of their good qualities. This is the only place I've encountered it expressed as a song in this book.
Yeah. Imagine that, though, going into the woods and listening for the song of your baby. Because kids do have a completely individual feeling tone about them. indescribable, but I suppose it could be called a song. I haven't really thought about that. I once wrote a piece, though, that I said to my son, this is you. This is you in music, or part of you. He was amazed. But, you know, so I'm not sure the very person themselves, in our case, maybe it wasn't the authentic the song, but it was my song for him. And I don't think he would have ever invented it himself. But anyway, it's just interesting that there's so much more than, I remember a nun saying to me once, we are all so much more than we appear to be. And I've just loved that. That's been a kind of mantra.
Well, that is absolutely the truth for many, many reasons, not the least of which is that our senses simply can't show us most of what is there in terms of the energy of creation that we're flowing in. It can't show us the X-rays and the microwaves and the radio waves and the ultraviolet and infrared light that we know we're swimming in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as a beginning for understanding that we do not perceive accurately through our senses. We perceive in a very limited fashion through our senses. The other thing about this that brought tears to my eyes this morning was that for whatever reason, the blessings of the parents I had and the loving family I was raised in, I was gifted with the mind energy and the thoughts to be continually telling my sons that I love them deeply and that I was grateful to know them and that they were very intelligent people who could make good decisions, especially at times when they had not made a very good decision. And so rather than raging, most often my response was to remind them of their brilliance and their ability to make good decisions and how when they made good decisions, they would have better consequences. And that reminded me of this village full of people when they encountered somebody who did something unethical or criminal or against societal values, rather than punishing them, they would remind them of their brilliance and light.
That's so gorgeous. Pam Grout quoted W.H. Auden this morning, and stagger onward, rejoicing. That is something that went right in a way that sometimes the miracles lessons don't do. I'm telling you, sometimes I'll memorize the miracles lesson in the morning and say, okay, I'm going to repeat this every hour or every half hour or whatever it is. And I can't remember it. And I look it up and all day long. And Tim Bingham and I'll be walking in the afternoon. He'll say, what's the lesson for today? And I'll say, I can't remember. And I don't know if that's resistance or if it isn't the right fit right then, but Pam Grout has said two things in the last couple of days. She used the word spectrum. Maybe that was today. I get mixed up because I sometimes read ahead and read behind. She said, don't get limited into this, that, the other. Live in the full spectrum. That stayed with me. And this W.H. Auden thing has stayed with me. And you read her intro yesterday, a lot of which was about how we really have to discern between being very busy on our purpose or just avoiding the work. And if we miss a lesson, what's the reason we missed the lesson? Is it because we just don't want to bother and we're putting something ahead of that in importance? And I've been fussing about that, and this is an old issue. I have never been willing or able, I'm not sure which, to do the lessons according to the calendar and the recommendations in the course workbook. It seems too much. Like today, I was given an assignment to get a piece of music out onto a video with matching, an audio with matching video score pages so that when the music played, you'd see the score page and synchronization and all that stuff. It took me 3 hours to do. I wasn't even finished when 12 o'clock came, and I thought, in no way was I going to be willing to stop for 5 minutes each hour and do my lesson. And I think that stubbornness, it's resistance, it's also practical. So I don't know what to do with all that. Certain things get through, and they seem to be riding on the song. W.H. Auden said something that's like a song. It went in and stuck, and it's been helpful and delicious. And the same thing with the living in the full spectrum. I'm going around looking at and thinking about things in a much wider spectrum because that word was used and the admonishment was used not to get stuck in the old brain ruts and all that stuff, but to do the full spectrum. And I'm just deciding that that's going to be the way I'm going to do. I'm doing my work, Dr. Tim, but I'm not doing it the way they say. And
okay.
I can't
well,
tell you. Yeah.
Well, but what I want to encourage you to do is breathe and soften and understand
okay.
that the way you do it is perfect for you. And
whoa, I did breathe. That's good.
Because
good.
It's nowhere near as important that you follow this to the letter as it is that you just keep doing it when you're moved to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back to 2 days ago and the review introduction, it has 12 or 13 paragraphs about gearing up for this review and how each day's review assignments will conclude with a restatement of the thought to use for each hour. And
mm-hmm.
and be careful in the first few paragraphs about your hesitance, because it does not want you to rework your entire life and put everything aside and go live in a cave and study these lessons.
Mm.
The second paragraph says, we understand, of course, that it may be impossible for you to undertake what is suggested here as optimal each day and every hour of the day. And this, it says right here in my copy of this, dear Susan Bingham, please note, learning will not be hampered when you miss the practice period because it is impossible at the appointed time. It says your name right here in my copy of the book.
All right.
Dear Susan Bingham, please remember, learning will not be hampered when you miss a practice period because it is impossible at the appointed time. Nor is it necessary that you make excessive efforts to be sure that you catch up in terms of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Rituals are not our aim.
Mm-hmm.
And rituals would defeat our goal.
Another big breath. Yep. Okay.
Not only is this book not telling you, you better do this every hour and every half hour. Not only is it not telling you that, it's telling you that if you try to force yourself to do that and make it a ritual, it will defeat the purpose of the lesson.
Mm.
So just soften and breathe into that for a minute, and then consider the possibility that, as you say, that you've done the Course in Miracles lessons before, you've attempted to do them before, etc., and you've never gotten through it perfectly or whatever. Please understand that there are probably reasons for that, and they will be reasons that are beyond your knowing, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
And
I remember when
what matters is if you are drawn, if you are moved to come back to the lessons again and again, then that's what matters. And how you use it each time you're drawn back into it will be the perfect thing for you. At times it may be a life lesson about giving up or not following through on commitments, and at times it will be a lesson in learning to go with the flow and appreciating that everything that happens, the way Byron Katie would talk to us about it, from, you know, the I don't know mind, that everything that happens is perfect just as it happens.
When Tim and I were studying Eastern religions, Vedanta, and spending a lot of time studying the Bhagavad Gita, there was a story, and I forget where it was. It probably wasn't in the Gita now that I think about it. I think it was a story about one of Ramakrishna's disciples. He came to him, and it was a woman. She came to him and said, "I can't do this practice," whatever it was. And he said, "Well, then how about doing this?" And she said, "No, I can't do that." And he named a couple of other possibilities. And she said each time, "I can't do that." And finally he said, "Who do you love? What do you love?" And the woman said, "I have a nephew. He's 6 months old." And Ramakrishna said, "Okay, go and hold him. And love him the way you obviously love him. And start there." And the woman could do that. And I've often thought, I'm sort of like the woman. I keep saying, "I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do the other." And can't is a funny word. It might mean, it's sort of like needs and wants. It might not be true. I might be able to do it. Maybe I deeply don't desire to do it. I don't want to do it. But whatever it is, Ramakrishna never got mad at her or impatient. He stayed with her, sort of like that tribe that stayed with the person who needed to be reminded of their own song. So gorgeous. And the Ramakrishna just stayed with her.
And that's what we want you to do with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I might discover, as I am moved to come back to the Course in Miracles lessons for the 37th time, right, 37 years into this work, I might discover that the real reason I interrupt my lessons or I don't follow through is that I'm holding a belief that if I did, I would become unknowable to my family.
Yeah.
Or I would have to give up something that I crave and I don't think I could live without.
Hmm.
And so, you know, if that happens and I make that discovery, then I deal with it when I make it. But I don't need to beat myself up over the times that I have spent doing the lesson partially or doing it, you know, as best I could in one way or another, because every bit of that is just life, is just me being a human being doing the best he can in each moment with whatever resources he has. How could that be a bad thing? It can't. You know, we're in this very unhealthy pattern in our society where we have been taught to honor the negative emotional states of blame and guilt and shame and literally put them up on a pedestal or wear them as a badge of courage, and they are not productive. And there are really good ways and really good teachers that come at us and try and remind us, like Byron Katie does, that everything is perfect just the way it's happening.
Mm.
And or, you know, Brené Brown and her husband go back and forth trying to discuss whether or not every human being is doing the very best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have. And that's not what our culture teaches.
Right.
And let's hope that our culture is wrong, because our culture has led to war after war and verbal and emotional abuse in relationships and physical abuse and sexual abuse. And so let's hope there's another way to look at this. Let's hope that another way to look at my situation, to be more like Sylvia Boorstein every time I have a negative thought or emotion and put my hand over my heart space and say to myself, very, very gently, Timmy, sweetheart, you're in pain. Take a few deep breaths, calm down, then we'll look at what's going on, and then we'll decide what to do. And that includes if I get upset with myself because I realize I made a commitment to do the Course in Miracles lessons and now I'm not doing them. It's far more productive for me to be gentle with myself and just accept that what's happening is happening and maybe question it gently and look for potential explanations than it is for me to beat myself up and entertain a whole bunch of negative thoughts about myself because I didn't live up to that commitment. The negative emotions, it says this in Way of Mastery very, very clearly. It says, listen, it's not that you will never experience anger again. Of course you will experience anger again. All that teaching is guiding us towards is to just stop rationalizing it. Just understand that the anger is always an error in thought. Michael Rice has lately taken to calling them thought disorders. But if I'm gentle with myself and acknowledge the error that's leading to the negative emotion and acknowledge that it's an inside job, now I have myself actually looking at something that I have control over and I can pick up the tools to explore and dismantle. But getting angry at myself or someone else when they don't live unto a commitment is completely counterproductive. Questioning it is productive. Gently questioning, let's say that this is the third time I've decided to do the Course in Miracles lessons, and I get to about lesson 113, and I realize, oh my gosh, the last 7 days I haven't done any lessons. I completely dropped the ball here.
Hmm.
Well, gently questioning for myself, gee, what was going on 7 or 8 or 9 days ago that might have been building up to trigger me to stop doing the lessons? What was going on in the lesson, either the last one I did or the one I didn't do? What is written in there that might be a challenge for me or that my mind might have used to create some fearful set of predictions? If I gently question that, I'm going to get more out of it than beating myself up and thinking how horrible and what a schmuck I am and how bad it is that I can't follow through on commitments or whatever. Take a gentle breath and soften and explore, well, gee, I wonder what it is about this commitment that made me make the commitment when part of me clearly didn't want to follow through on it. Let me just explore that gently. Maybe I was only doing it because I wanted to look spiritual to this group of people that I hang out with. Maybe I was only doing it because I had a guru who told me I needed to. And it wasn't really coming from a desire within me to grow and explore and expand my experience of life in a different way. If I gently question If I live in the observation, if I know that asking that question is going to leave me without any clear answers right away, and that's okay, and I can guide myself to be more comfortable living in that gentle, opening, questioning, observing way, I open the doors for growth. When I pour my energy into thoughts that create a negative emotion or negative thoughts about myself, I shut off the potential for growth. It is that cut and dried. There is no more to it than that. A choice for anger, a choice for bitterness, a choice for what Course in Miracles would call grievances is the opposite of the choice for love, is the opposite of the choice for miracles. Whatever I build a grievance about, whatever mind energy I pour into my thoughts about grievance, whether it's toward myself or somebody else, it's the opposite of choosing direct observation about my true nature and staying consciously aware of the miracle of life expressing in, through, as, and around me. And the choice, once I become aware of it, the choice is mine. And one key to being able to explore these choices and the consequences of the choices I've made is to be gentle with myself in the exploration and questioning.
You know that Cynthia Bourgeois thing about putting your hand on your heart?
And Sylvia Borstein?
Sweetheart. Cynthia, what did I call her? Yeah.
Cynthia
right.
Bourgeois, you said.
Oh, sorry. Borstein, yeah. I'm not there.
What about
I
that process
what,
of?
Well, this business, it's hard to even talk about it. This business of
business
having
of
your
being
own
gentle
farm.
With yourself?
Yeah, well, she appreciates herself and can say that to herself. And probably she really means it and feels it. It's just a wonderful thing that she can do that.
Okay, so are you like hiking up a hill or are you having strong emotion about the thought of being gentle with yourself?
I'm having strong emotion about it. Yeah, I'm not hiking up a hill.
So please soften and breathe into that because that is a very fruitful area of exploration for you.
Yeah. Somehow, the idea of a person having a song and that other people could hear it is just so wonderful. I don't know if my parents ever heard my song or even their own songs.
So just breathe and soften into what is sounding more and more as you let it come out, like sadness or grief.
Yeah.
So just breathe, soften into this, and, you know, it comes to me to suggest the mind shifter that erupted on the show a few years ago with Michelle, something like, there has never been, nor will there ever be born, a person who has more value than Susan Bingham. Just breathe.
I can't even go there. Yeah. No,
just breathe.
I understand
just,
that.
Because you'll, when you do that, you'll tap into even more of this grief and sadness. The thought that that could be true and yet could have been so powerfully, negatively hidden from you, beaten out of you, literally, as a child, will tap into even deeper levels of grief than you were just experiencing in a few waves minutes ago. So I encourage you to soften and breathe into the exploration of every thought that wants to fight against your value, your having your own song, your being as valuable and worthwhile as any human being that's ever been or ever will be. And be willing to explore that, because it is the doorway through which you and then your children and grandchildren will experience a life dramatically better and different than what your forefathers and mothers have experienced.
I'm hoping that it's possible to pass that on to them without having it fully realized in myself. I'm just hoping that it isn't even faking it. I absolutely adore my grandchildren, and I believe they are wonderful, and I do practice a lot of the things you've suggested, like telling my OCD suffering grandson that he's okay, he's healthy, he's very, very bright. He has the right thoughts. He just has to realize that he has them, and he does. Oh, I don't answer the OCD questions that he asks for reassurance. I say, what do you think? What does your best mind think? He always gives the best, immediately gives the answer of a healthy thinking mind. And I say, yeah, you've got it. You've got it. Live into that. Let the other thing go. But, yeah, you got it. You got it, Charlie. And you helped me realize that, and that's been great. Now, I just want to accept it, too. And I hope if I don't get there, that the kids are going to be okay anyway. They don't have to have me get there for myself. I can give it to them. And in giving it to them, maybe it's coming to me, too. But even putting the hand on the heart and saying, Susan, sweetheart, man, I squirm. That just doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel good.
All right. Okay, but I encourage you to do it every time you can, and then explore what is feeding and fueling the squirming, because those are the lies and the traumatic energies and the negative beliefs passed down through your generations that need to be dismantled.
Right.
And understand this. Whatever spiritual teacher might tell you that you have to do this or that for your grandson or granddaughter or whatever, understand this. You're giving them one of the best gifts any parent or grandparent could ever give a person, child or grown adult, and that is a living, breathing example that they are never too old to learn and grow and change and become the kind of person that they would like to be.
Mm.
That's happening. That is happening. You are magnificent and thriving, and you are giving that to them. Full stop. Full realization. So breathe into that, hand over your heart space or not, whatever works, And thank you so much once again for chiming in here near at the end of the show. And I look forward to hearing how it's going when we connect again.
Thanks. Thanks, Dr. Tim,
a lot.
Thanks.
You're very welcome and deserving. I'll remind us all once again, as I have already in this show, that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. You have a good weekend. Awesome conversation going on. So I hope that, Susan, if you want to continue, Michael is already with us. I'll welcome everybody first to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today's Friday, April the 23rd, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. Susan, I'm going to unmute you again. And welcome, Michael. Michael, I hear you talking through the wall, but not through your speaker.
Oh, the old mute challenge, yes. My apology. Welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're with us, young lady. How can we support you?
I'm not sure.
Sounds like you had a
Dr.
pretty good,
Tim
intense
got...
conversation going with Dr. Tim.
Yeah. It's hard to admit this because it seems so self-centered and everything. But
breathing with you.
He has suggested many times that when we're upset about something, we do what this spiritual director, writer, person, Cynthia. I said the name wrong, and I've been saying it wrong for a long time. Cynthia Bujold or Bojol or something. And he corrected me, and it's gone right out of my head again. She says, Cynthia, sweetheart, she puts her hand on her heart and says, Cynthia, sweetheart, you're upset. Take a breath. And when I hear that, I think, I don't do that. I won't do that. I can't do that.
Because?
Call myself.
I mean, it sounds like
call
brilliant
myself
advice.
Sweetheart?
Yeah.
Call myself sweetheart.
How cool would that be?
Actually,
would be cherish
cool.
yourself.
Right. And so Tim Hayes was talking about a tribe. He was, it was something in the I Ching. And it's in a book that's by Alan Cohen that is sort of an intuitive interpretation of the I Ching, as far as I understand it, where he talks about
right.
a tribe where when a mother is pregnant, I can't even talk about it without crying about it. It's so gorgeous.
Well, let's cry. Let's
when
go
a,
for it.
when
Let
a
it all hang out, baby.
She and her partner, her husband, go out into the wilderness, and they wait to hear the child's song.
And they wait
until that song is heard, and then they go home. And they teach it to the tribe. And when the baby arrives, the tribe sings that song to the baby.
Talk about and being honored, eh?
It's so gorgeous. And then if the child, at various times when the child is initiated into adulthood or there's some other big thing, they sing the child the song. And if the child ever does something wrong, they sing to the child. They sing the child's song. And
yeah.
I just think that's the most beautiful story I ever heard.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's powerful. And it sounds like you're processing all the grief around never having been recognized for your song and your being.
I think that's why I became a composer. I wrote a song once and I said to my son, this is your song. And he always says when he meets someone he really cares about, he says, she has a song. That's what he says. Mm. He said that to me since he was a teenager. He says, Mom, I really love her, and she has a song.
Hmm. Sweet.
Isn't that gorgeous? Anyway,
mm-hmm.
So it really got me going in the work you've been doing with us in the with that power person worksheet. I'm telling you, we're not going to get through that for a long time. You can, you're going to hope
yes.
for that, but you know, I feel as if I am a walking example of my power persons. So much of me is my power people doing their things.
So guess what?
What?
Everybody you've ever observed, everybody is doing that.
Yeah.
Until that power person dynamic is discovered and worked through, that's what runs people's lives. And of course, the people who are in the most trouble are the ones who say, well, I never really had a power person. It was never any of that for me.
Right.
So the power person dynamic was denial for that person. And the denial,
right.
of course, leads us into dissociation and hiding from ourselves. So I'm here to hold the space for you
too.
To process all that grief.
You know what's weird, too, is my mom did, she had a wonderful personality and was a very beautiful woman. And she had a wonderful way with people. And she always was kind and cheerful to people, considerate and thoughtful to people. And some of that, I mean, it was all true of her. She wasn't lying. But on the other hand, this is where the power person dynamic gets very confusing. It's like doing the right thing for the wrong reason. She did
yeah.
a lot of that out of fear. Her sweetness, her friendliness, her giggle that she did when she met a new person or saw someone at a distance, she would have this little giggle. And I find myself doing it. And I say, will you stop that? I tell myself, that is not you. That's your mother doing that because she was uneasy. She was uncomfortable with someone new approaching her. You know, it's just so extensive. Even the good behaviors, so many of them were done for not healthy reasons, but they weren't bad things. And they put people
yep.
at ease. So I have trouble sorting out this stuff.
So don't sort it out.
Okay. And
because
I
sorting
an
it out
for you
is just another way of figuring it out. It's just another way
yeah.
of figuring it out. Remember the number one solution is if I could just figure this out? You can't figure it
yeah.
out with your heart.
Yeah.
But you can forgive it.
Oh, yeah. I think so. It's like I'm just looking at it with total amazement. But, Michael, I have a suggestion about, or a thought. I feel like Magda and I are on the same. She has suggestions, and I have suggestions, and I hope you don't mind. But you asked.
All suggestions,
you,
absolutely welcomed. You don't ever have to apologize for that again. You could
okay.
let go of that. You could just throw out your suggestions. And, you know, if they work, I'll work them.
Well,
if they don't, I'll say thank you.
Okay. My thought is that the power person worksheet is mammoth in itself.
Yes,
and
it is.
The idea of using the material you learn from doing the power person worksheet on a present day upset person situation or thing, those I think should remain two separate things. We got all fouled up. I thought, who am I doing this on? Is this my power person or is this the person in my life who I'm fussing about? And I would go back
right.
and forth and back and forth. And if it could be built in somehow that what you learn from doing this deep, deep detail power person thing will show you how to do a seven-step worksheet with a present-day upset or not present-day, whatever it happens to be, and not put them together in that one big worksheet. That's a thought.
Okay. Well, I will look at that thought, and, you know, I've clarify much of where the confusion came in. And so we'll see how it unfolds for the next version. And again, you know, we're only at version 5, and you know, the Y worksheet is at version 3000 and who knows what plus. So
right.
We might have a few more additions to go before we get it really tweaked and where it really works.
Right. Well, and if you've clarified it in a way that makes it clear, that would be a solution to that. That was my solution to the problem. But yeah. Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it will.
So I don't know what's going on, but my whole body is vibrating, Michael.
You are in process, young lady. That's awesome. So I breathe with you. Let's just take a second. And if anybody is listening, we'll just tune in to Susan's energy and breathe. Just connect your breath in. Susan, this has opened up a major piece of work, obviously.
One of the entryways into this piece of work is the fact that I am aging, and I know a lot of us are getting older, and you know, it was hard enough when we were children and teens, and when we were children and teens, we had no idea most of the time how beautiful we were, how wonderful we were. We had no
miraculous
idea. All the way along, we beat up on ourselves if we did. I mean, I did that. And I think a lot of us in our culture do that. Worse now because of the internet, Instagram, Facebook, we're all seeing happy people grinning and showing wonderful meals and happy families. And we think, I don't measure up. And that isn't so much. And my grandsons talk to me, I can't do this. Like, you know, they're doing that. But what I'm saying is, I know I'm all over the place. I look in the mirror I practice the commitment thing in the mirror, and I look at myself, can't or won't feel much of anything for my very own face, except when I see how I look like my mother, my father, and my sisters, or my cousin, even Maggie. We have a lot of resemblance, and I love them so much that I think I can love myself if I remember that I look like them. So it's getting closer. But to actually not mind my funny looking looks and my jowls and chin hairs and baggy eyes and no eyebrows to speak of and eyelashes disappearing and hair going, and I'm thinking it's all superficial what I'm looking at. I'm seeing something that isn't really me, but I haven't been able to get past it. And so it's very hard to do the commitment and look in the mirror.
Yeah.
And it all seems related to this song.
So how did it feel when your power person told you you were funny looking and unacceptable?
My mom never did that. She never did that. But she did hit us. And so I know I just felt unacceptable, sort of basically unacceptable. But she often would say we're beautiful. I just didn't believe her. I thought, that's not the deepest truth about me, Mom. And we both know it.
So the first thought that comes is, you might want to do a worksheet or two as though you were your mother around her relationship with you. Do it as her toward you.
Okay. All right.
And see what that uncovers.
Okay.
And I suspect that
I will.
Doing worksheets where for yourself, you cancel the need to be and all the list of, you know, what you wanted to be, that you start letting loose of that so that you make a space for, I look in the mirror and I go, wow, look at this miracle that God created. How awesome. And that's the only thing in your file left in your file on you.
Wow. My mom.
Because we live in a culture that purposely put debilitating, damnable thoughts into our minds about ourselves. It's kind of like one of the thrusts of the culture. And it's a way that kings learned to keep control of people. And that just has come right down the line. If you get too big for your britches, I'll just pull that chain of insecurity and self-deprecation, and you'll jump right back in line.
Wow.
And so I support you letting go of those things, because none of those messages are true about you or anybody else. I mean, I think virtually everybody, and I say this from my own personal experience and from working with a lot of people, I think everybody looks in the mirror and goes, what a funny face.
Yeah.
So,
my mom.
Well, before you tell me about mom, so my suggestion is, sneak up on yourself.
What?
Rather than going standing, sneak up on yourself.
Okay.
Rather than standing and going looking at yourself in the mirror, just walk by the mirror and give yourself a casual glance as though you're looking at someone else. And notice how different you look than when you are resonating that file of false perceptions about self.
I've done that. You know, I've done that. I know just what you mean. I think that's not so bad. And then I make a list of excuses. Well, I'm standing far away. The mirror, you know, I'm walking by the mirror. They can't really see. And I'm moving. And all sorts of excuses. But, yeah, I've had that experience.
So that's a more accurate perception about who you are in terms of physiological appearance than when you resonate in the file on me. And now I'm looking through all this garbage that I carry about me, and I'm projecting that all into the image in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And begin to work toward, actually, that's kind of a cute smile. I like that. And let yourself breathe with it instead of making excuses, and let yourself breathe with it and go, gee, I have a cute smile. You know, I've got a picture of you and Tim on my phone, and I showed it to Jeannie the other day, and Jeannie's comment was, wow, Susan's really beautiful.
Oh, my God. What picture was that?
It was a picture of you guys. It looks like maybe around the time you got married.
Is it a black and white picture? Because I look good.
It's a black and white. That's the one.
Yeah.
Say again?
I look back and I think, wow, yeah, we were pretty cute. Tim was massively handsome.
You were beautiful.
Down. Crazy handsome. Oh. Yeah.
So
well, we often
nothing's
look
changed.
Back and we can...
Nothing's changed. I mean, if you've ever seen a person who's 70 and gone, wow, they're really beautiful. Nothing has changed about you. You're just interjecting these false messages into the construct that you make about yourself. And it's been programmed by authorities for eons in our bloodline. So you came by it, honestly, and I support you forgiving it.
You know, my mother was very beautiful, and she spent a lot of time at her boudoir first thing in the morning, plucking her eyebrows, putting on makeup. And she had bottles and pencils and brushes, and I was fascinated by all that. And then when she was 60, she got a facelift, and she told my dad she wanted to do that, and he was kind of horrified, but he said, well, if you, sure. I mean, my dad was this gentle man, and he said, sure, if you want. It was expensive, and they didn't have a lot of money. And she did that, and then she had another one later, and eye lifts later. And by the time I was taking care of her, she was in her late 80s and into her 90s, I saw what that face looked like. There were scars.
Breathe.
And I felt so badly that she felt she had to do that. She didn't know. She was beautiful.
It's a family tradition.
Yeah, and she didn't want any of us to know. She hid it from us, but I said one day, Mom, fess up. I know. And she said, well, I don't want to talk about it. She was ashamed.
Yeah.
And she knew she had wasted money, money they didn't have. And then in the end, her face, the face of an old woman, was so stretched in funny ways and with white areas where the scarring had been. And I don't think we really knew what my mother looked like in herself at all.
Yeah.
And I vowed then and then, I would never do that, and I'm not going to do that, but I can't quite look in the mirror.
So notice that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Notice that you're doing exactly that. No, you haven't gotten a knife put to your face, but you got all the stuff you inherited and that she modeled about why you're not good enough and there's something
mm-hmm.
wrong with your face or your body or your mind. And just notice you inherited it and it's played out, and now it's time to forgive it.
Yeah. Oh,
man. Time to be done with it.
Mm. Okay.
Good breath. I'm breathing with you.
Thanks. What does it mean when there's all this energy in your body that's just vibrating?
You're in process. You've opened the files and the energy's moving. It's called release. It's called process. And I just sent you a song to listen to.
Okay. Thanks.
So you are in big time process. And what an awesome place to be.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
And I support you to continue breathing. If it's in reach or when we finish the show, I would suggest you go put your hand in the abyss and breathe and let all this energy that's moving go to the next level of process.
I don't really know what that would be. I suppose nobody does, though.
You know, you don't have to figure it out. All you need to do is breathe and let it move.
You know what just fell off my shelf? A book.
What?
That says The Moment of Lift by Melinda Gates.
Ah,
isn't that amazing?
Interesting.
It's like a miracle.
talk about
like
messages.
A word. Isn't that great?
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Michael.
Honored, 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 and delighted. And if you go back and listen to this, which I would suggest you do, you will notice that your opening words in the conversation were, when we're upset about something, and there's some affirmation from the cat.
Yeah. Just got up in my lap.
And notice that you started a conversation about, I'm upset about something, and, you know, what the previous conversation was, and it's something out there. And notice what you just went into has nothing to do with what's out there, nothing to do with what happened, and nothing to do with that story about the song, except that it triggered content that you're ready to heal.
Right.
And... you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful, not Dr. Feelgood place, but it's a wonderful place to be.
How wonderful that that book fell off this pile of books right then, all by itself. What?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think it was all by itself.
That's one of those miracles. Yeah, okay.
It's called The Universe is Conspiring to Support You.
Thanks.
And what a great title. The Moment of Lift, as you're talking about facelifts and lifting yourself up out of this old power person dynamic. It's like,
that's unbelievable.
How perfect.
It's, the universe has such a sense of humor.
Yeah. And the subtitle of the book, I believe, is How Empowering Women Changes the World.
I think it's something like that. I can't see it from where I'm sitting. But yeah, Melinda Gates. Right.
How Empowering Women Changes the World.
Telling you, Michael, this is weird. What an affirmation.
Yeah, it doesn't get better than that, just dropping off the shelf. I remember several years ago, I had somebody who'd been at some workshops and done some work and then kind of, you know, just forgot about it and went off trailing somewhere else. And I was literally 10 years later at, and she called in this panic of, when's your next intensive? I need to get to intensive. She's like, well, whoa, slow down. What's happening? I did your workshops back 10 years ago. You probably don't remember me, but, you know, and then I haven't looked at the tools. And I'm in a major crisis. I got all this stuff going on in my life, and my husband's doing this, and my kids are doing that. And I was walked in the room, and your book fell off the bookshelf and hit me in the head. It's like, and I need to get to a workshop. I realize that. So,
oh, I love it. That's great.
So I stand in the space where you, along with all women, especially those who've been beaten down or abused by their power person, become empowered and change the world. We need women to change the world. The knuckleheads running it now on the male side of things, the patriarchs, aren't likely to make any big shifts soon unless the women step in and shift the energy.
Mm-hmm. You
and,
know,
of course,
that
you got to do it
that...
on the inside before you can move it on to the outside.
Right. You know that song, Keb Mo's Put a Woman in Charge? You've got to know that song.
Mm-hmm.
It just popped into my head.
It's time.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
Thank
time.
You, Michael.
It's time for healing across the board here. I'm looking at the back cover of the book right now. It says, this book is an urgent manifesto for an equal society where women are valued and recognized in all spheres of life. We need this message now more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
What a message.
Yeah.
So we're here holding the space with you.
And Susan, I just got a text from Ann, who was in our class, and she said, just a reminder, Susan has community. And Ann says she's been breathing and processing with you ever since you were first talking with Dr. Tim.
Hmm. Oh, tell her. Sweet. Thank you so much. Thank you. Tell her thank you so much. She's one Mitch.
And as for the cat coming in and getting on your lap, animals tap into the energy that sometimes people don't even recognize themselves, and they know, mm-hmm. and they come to either be part of the energy or to comfort you in it.
Yeah. He's an amazing kitty. I've got two amazing kitties, but he shows up a lot, talks to me. So.
And I'm looking at information about Melinda right now, and one of her other books is The Mother and Child Raising
mm-hmm.
Our Voices for Health and Hope.
Mm.
Another of her books is The Moment of Lift, Invisible Women.
That's the one.
Women don't owe you pretty. And I'd support you doing the work in your mom's stead as well, because it sounds like she was the recipient of the same withholds of approval about self.
Mm-hmm. She was, and your work at the workshop has brought open so much awareness about my power person, who was my mother, and everything she did that was on the negative side was out of the pain she was in, which was unimaginable. It was just unimaginable. So much self-denial, surely rage, disappointment, frustration, grief. She lost a baby sister.
Nothing you recognize in any of those emotions, though, right?
Oh, right. I thought of Jeannie because my mom had a baby sister that was born and didn't last more than 72 hours. And my mother used to go and hide in the closet because people didn't cry. You know, for me to cry on the radio show is really a big win, Michael. My mother hid when she cried. She hid, and she told me how she used to hide in the closet and cry because she was an only child and had no sibling, and particularly this sister. She wanted that sister so much. And she told me that, but my mom was terrified to cry in front of anybody and only cried under great duress twice in my memory and hid herself in abject shame when she did it. And so you've opened a lot of that. I know I've cried a lot on your show, in spite of the fact that there are people listening. Holy mackerel, is that breaking a script right there.
anyway.
Yeah.
And the way, the amount, the depth with which I adored my mother and wanted so badly to heal her and help her and comfort her and fix her and all the whole thing translated into so many unhealthy relationships with women where I would just fall in love with them with this terrible urgency to help. But I couldn't help. I would choose the ones who wouldn't be helped because my mother wouldn't be helped. It was just this power person thing has just opened up cycles of realization about all the hidden dynamics between my mother and me and the rest of us. And so doing a worksheet with my mother, I've written letters, you've told me, to write a letter from my mother to me. It doesn't get to the depths I need, and it's getting there now. I can feel it. I knew what she would like to say, but it's all on a mental level. It's not on this level. This level has gotten there finally.
Yeah.
This is the moment of lift. It really is.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got to be powerful enough. We've got to be vital enough. We've got to be solvent in our physiology in order to get to that level, to touch it. That's why, you know, we're doing all aspects of the work. That's why we're suggesting people eat real food, you know, fresh and raw as much as possible, you know, because that's all part of being able to open up to this level of process.
Right. I can see that. I can see that and I can feel that. And there has been a great increase in vitality, you know, just during these retreats, being able to bore down and to stop.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I'm suggesting that as soon as we finish, get your hand in the avacyn, breathe, and while you're in this state, that will support it opening further, deeper, and more profoundly.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
What an awesome, sweet piece of work to do. Angels in heaven are applauding. And I bet your mom is too.
I hope so. It's the only way I've been able to help is after she died.
And what's the thought behind that one? That's another worksheet. Yeah, right.
I know. And it's not true. I just realized that's not true. She lived with us for the last 3 years of her life. And we had a great time. And I was able to carry her around, lift her, play with her, feed her. It was great. So a lot of that did happen, I think.
Yeah, it sounds
like
it.
We never talked about anything, though. We never talked about anything, but we sort of did it.
So here you are at the next level. That's awesome.
Thanks, Michael.
And we know that you're at least taking Anne with you. And Jeannie and I have been processing around her mom the last day or two, so I suspect that probably this is opening a space for Jeannie. Jeannie, do you have anything to share?
I've just been breathing, though. I need to go back and re-listen to what I had to say when I was still point breathing because I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, just to plug it in this space of vitality, and this may trigger another possibility for you, Susan, was that yesterday Jeannie was in process with stuff around Mom, and she was out doing some errands and had Dad to the doctor, and I was home creating dinner. And one of the things that happened after Jeannie's mom passed was that she found some of her journals and her prayers for healing.
Aww.
And the guidance I had was to suggest that Jeannie dig those books out and read through those prayers, because those prayers, I guarantee, are power person prayers. They're your prayers. And it'll open things on a whole other level.
Wow. Jeannie, are you, do you feel courageous enough to read them?
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I'll find them. I'll pull them out.
And I'll be right there with you, sweetie. In fact, if you'd like, I'll read them to you. While you
and
breathe.
If there's anything you want to share that you might think is applicable, I would love to hear them. If that's okay.
Sure.
My mother didn't go there. She didn't write prayers. She was an atheist. Not really. I mean, at the end of her life, she looked at a little flower and said, "Boy, how did this happen?"
But did she ever write any journals? Is there any of her writing around where she might have confessed to herself what she needed to deal with?
No, but she wrote letters to us, which I saved in a huge folder, and it took me years before I could read them. But because of your retreat, I got around to reading them. And they were full of how much she loved us. Full, not regrets about how she had treated us, but full of how much she worried about us and thought about us and admired us, was so proud of us. They were just full of them. This was all, you know, just amazing to read.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was afraid of her life, afraid of most things, and yet gutsy. But I don't need to go into all that. It's just she's very much on my mind these days because she was my big, big, big power person. She's this tiny little 90-pound mother, powerful as heck.
So holding the space for everything that's ready to open in that regard. Sweetheart, do you have anything to share?
Are you talking to me or Jeannie?
Jeannie? I promise
no,
I won't. I may call you young lady, but I won't call you sweetheart.
Okay.
Sweet. All right. Well, breathing with everybody. I got that... you're getting some vicarious healing here, opening the space. So, enjoying each and every one in deep, full, vitalizing breaths and embracing mothers in conscious, active, present love and the parts of ourselves that have bounced off of the power person dynamics with them, getting safe enough to bring those pieces forward and forgive them, remove them. So any other thoughts for you, Susan?
Only that the fact that my mother had to work so hard on her face to make it acceptable is, I'm just realizing that's the voice in my head when I'm looking in the mirror because I've never had a facelift, and I think to myself, I should have a facelift, but I'm not going to do it. But I've got all those thoughts in there from my mom. And yet, on the other hand, how much I love seeing the untouched face of an older woman who's just let herself grow into her face. How beautiful that seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
All of it, wrinkles and
souls. So sneak up on yourself every day. Sneak up on yourself every day and realize that's you you're talking about.
Yeah,
and maybe
let it rip.
Yeah, maybe you could even whisper that in mom's ear, invite her to sneak up on herself.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we'll be holding the space, especially as you you breathe and listen to that song that I sent you.
Thanks, Michael. I'll play it when I stick my hands back in that Avison. I already had it in today twice.
Awesome. Well, I've had mine in for the whole hour, so rock and roll.
Wow. Good for you. I don't get gangrene from it, I trust.
We're rocking. All right.
Good.
You have a blessed rest of the day. And tell Tim we said hello and give him a hug for us.
Well, thanks, Michael. Thanks, Nini.
All right.
Wow,
well,
that was powerful.
We're down to about, oh, yeah, still breathing. Yeah.
We have another hand
awesome.
Up.
Well, let's go for it.
Area code 813. I think this is Kathy Klein.
Hey, Kathy.
Are you with us?
Are you with us?
We're getting a little
hello,
bit of a
Kathy.
Echo.
Hello, Kathy. Sounds like maybe she stepped away from the phone for a minute or something. Somebody just put her. Are there any other hands up?
No, there's not. Maybe announce about Sunday. And I do have that in the notes for today.
Great, yes. Yeah, on Sunday, I'm going to be doing a Sunday service at 10:30. If you'd like to join us for that, it will be at Unity of Port.
No, Unity of Blue Water. In
Blue Water,
Huron.
Port Huron, Michigan. Or Huron, Michigan, yeah. So if you want to join us, if you go to their homepage on Facebook, then you'll be able to join us live for
that
service.
I put a link to that in the notes for today, too, and we'll put it out on our Facebook pages as well. And we did have a hand up. A hand just went up, 651. You're on the air.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael. It's June.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey.
What's
Thank
on your
you.
Mind today? How can we support you?
Well, I was doing a worksheet before I called into the show, and there's not a lot of time to go into a lot of it. I decided I wanted to do one around the path. It seems like a lot of grief centers around my husband and how he treated me once he started drinking a lot. And, I don't try to decide what I want to bring up from it. I guess the first thing was when writing the thoughts for my worksheet, my thought that I wrote was, my story was that he no longer gives me attention and affection. And my thought was, I can't live with his hostility and neglect, but I don't want to give up. And I thought, can we have a, that's like two thoughts, but that's part of the problem, is that divided mind. I want this, I don't want this. Do you have any suggestions about that?
Absolutely. Each thought that generates some form of hostility or fear is a different thought disorder and therefore a different worksheet to do.
So I would
recognize that.
I can't live with his hostility, neglect in a different worksheet, but I don't want to give up.
So one worksheet would be the desire for him to be loving, gentle, and respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, I suspect, the goal linked from what you've said in the processing we've done in the past, I would suspect that the goal would probably be to perhaps be powerful enough to impact him, attractive enough to draw him back into sanity.
Yeah, I hadn't looked at it quite that way, but the goal was that he behave the way he used to, with affection and attention.
Yeah.
And I realized, part of what's up around that is the recognition, something's terribly wrong with him. Something's really gone awry, and I didn't particularly. It was more of the recognition, something's wrong there. I didn't think it was so much about me. Maybe in some ways I did, but underneath, but not really. Mostly I was trying to be understanding of him, but you're right. You know, when you said powerful enough, it's like, yeah, I wanted to be powerful enough to convince him to get better. Yeah. And perhaps to like, okay, change back the way you were, because then I'll know that you're okay, rather than that something's really, really massively wrong with you that I can't control. And how frightening that is. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's one of your key words, something I can't control.
Right.
So there's probably one of your 77 times 70 worksheet issues. And you ask yourself the question, how did it feel when your power person controlled you?
Yeah, and I haven't worked on that one. That's a good one. And I can't offhand think of an instance of that, but I'm sure it happened. Yeah.
Of which?
That I was controlled by my power person.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you can measure that by how often, if you look around at your life, you've tried to control.
Wow, okay. Okay. So that all comes from having been controlled, you're saying.
Yes. It's replicating the power person dynamic. Everything that comes from hostility or fear, everything that runs the world based in hostility or fear is right square out of the power person dynamic. And the people that are in the most trouble are people who believe they don't have a power person or a power person dynamic to deal with.
Right. Yeah, and the feeling at the top of the worksheet was discouraged. Which doesn't seem to relate directly to hostility or fear, but discouraged is something that I feel a lot lately.
Well, I would suggest that discouraged is a reflection of fear. You know, if I could just control this, I could fix this, then everything would be all right. But here it is, it's going to fall apart because I'm afraid it's going to fall apart because I can't control it.
Okay.
So now that I don't have the power to control it, it's going to fall apart. Now I'm going to get hurt. I have fear.
So power person worksheets will help to dismantle that.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's interesting, the topic, and you might want to make the space to join us on Sunday for the service at Unity in Blue Water, Port Huron. The topic is the ultimate Trojan horse.
Oh.
And the subtitle is, and what you can do about war, death, decay, and suffering.
That sounds good. Is that... Are they on Eastern time, Michael?
Yes, 10:30 Eastern time. Yeah, everything that we quote on the show will always be Eastern time, unless it's, you know, if we've got some other time zone, we'll do that. But yeah, it's always Eastern time.
Okay.
So it's Unity of Blue Water in Port Huron, Michigan at 10:30 Eastern time on Sunday. On Facebook Live process.
All right, very good. So... one more question, since we have a little bit of time. As I was doing the worksheet, when I got down to number 4, I choose love, my essence. I thought, you know, I've done these worksheets so many times, and that always seems easy. It's like, oh, sure, I choose love. You know, that's great. I know the rose and butterfly story. But at the moment of doing this, I thought, what does that mean? Back then, I felt like I was choosing love in trying to be understanding of my husband and trying to really to show him as much love and understanding as I could. But, of course, I wasn't being very loving to myself.
And none of that has anything to do with love.
Right. So I thought maybe you could speak a little bit more about when we say, I choose love, my essence, how do we do that? What does that mean?
Well, if we were at an intensive, right now I'd be picking a marker off of my lectern, and I'd be turning around And you know the sentence I'd be writing on the board, right?
All of the above?
All of the above. It's the only thing. If you go back to 10 years of radio shows, 5 days a week for 10 years now in the archives, and listen from day one on, you'll never hear me answer anything except that question. It's every tool we've got. It's every thought, every correction, every piece that needs to be healed.
Yeah. Which doesn't, I think the hard part is, it's like, how do I fit that into a small moment in time as I do the worksheet? Like, okay.
You know.
All the above.
Yeah. You know, when you realize that time is just a way of measuring events, and we've got 1,000 unresolved events and 1,000 generations of unresolved events in our minds, it would appear that it's going to take a long time to go through it. Mm-hmm. And the depth of willingness is what opens the energy window to dissolve time. And when I realize all those things I said about wanting to be loving and caring and all of that, you know, caring, that's a wonderful thing. But the key is that love isn't something we do. It's not a verb. You can't love anybody. Nobody can love you. Nobody ever has and nobody ever will. Because love is a state of being. It's a noun. It's not a verb. It's what we are. And we've been so displaced from what we are by these power person dynamics, by the energetic patterns that we bought into in the power person dynamic, the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the self-deprecation, that most people haven't been visited by their essential nature, the presence of love, ever in their lives that they can remember. Well, you see, I have this list. If you do this list, then we'll know that you love me. And you know what? You could take a list that includes absolutely every possible service and, you know, way of supporting that you can possibly get, and you could fulfill all of those things, and there still wouldn't be love. Love only comes when we wake up to who we are and realize who we are and make ourselves real in this moment. And the thing that inhibits that is these power person dynamic realities that are generated by the mind that say, oh, no, this, is, oh, no, oh, what about, well, what about this? Well, what about that? And all of that noise, the whole idea of forgiveness is to quiet that noise, to still that mind. Literally, you know, you've heard me say it many times, to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. You don't find love in your mind. You find love when you get out of your mind. Because the mind can't figure it out, can't pretend it, can't do enough to be it. You know, you can take a list of, go back to Yeshua and look at everything he did throughout his whole life, everything wonderful that he did. And make a list of it and do every one of those things. And that won't mean there's love present. It'll just be the non-being mind trying to figure out how to make it look like love. And that thing's got to be collapsed. And that's when love shows up. So I'm breathing with you.
Yeah, I can feel that. Like, I can see another way of saying it would be, instead of, I mean, I choose love is good, but I might say, I remind myself that love is my upgrade.
Yeah.
And rest in that. You know, drop all the mind chatter and rest in that knowing. That, and I don't mean knowing the way we know from mind, but knowing. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll hold the space. Thank you for your questions and your input. I think on top of what we've been doing already, that has opened a whole other space again on top of what Susan was processing. Again, 10:30 Sunday, Facebook, Unity of Blue, Unity of, I'm so used to calling
Blue
it
water.
Unity Courtyard.
Blue Huron. Waters.
Blue Water. The ultimate Trojan horse and what you can do about war, death, decay, and suffering. Join us at 10 on Sunday. Blessings.